And welcome back once again to How to Survive 2025. I'm Brian Keene.
I'm Daisha M. Arnold.
I am Jim Cobb.
And guys, we are recording this on election night 2024. Folks will actually hear it next week. I know we have a lot of anxious listeners on both sides of the political spectrum. Everybody in America, I think, it's fair to say, is a little bit anxious tonight. But I feel safe in predicting that next week, when folks are listening to this, Jim, as you said earlier before we hit record, America will not resemble classic 1980s animated children's cartoon Thundar the Barbarian.
Which is still a dream project.
Oh, yes. They're actually Dynamite Comics has the rights to do a new line of Thundar stories. I emailed them hoping to pitch, never even heard back. So I'm sure whoever they get will not be as good as the pitch we would have given them.
No. They will not have the passion for it, that's for sure.
You got to have a passion for it. Some of those old Thundar VHS tapes are worth a lot of money if you have disposable income to spend on them. And speaking of disposable income, that's a nice segue into our topic
today. It sure was, because I was about to reel you guys back in.
Yeah. I'm a professional announcer, Daisha. I know what I'm doing. Today we're going to talk about the four pillars of financial preparedness. Not quite as sexy as some of the other topics we've talked about. But Jim, would you make an argument that they might actually be more important?
I think they are definitely more important. The thing is, when we talk about prepping, a lot of people immediately go to the Thundar the Barbarian, end of the world type stuff. And that can be fun, but the reality is things like financial preparedness are far more important for your day-to-day life. And anything you can do to reduce stress and anxiety in your life is beneficial. If you can get your financial world under control, everything else gets a little bit easier. And the thing is, the financial end of it is something that is often overlooked in the prepper world. Partially because there's this mindset of, well, you know, when society collapses, money's not going to be worth anything, so why bother? Cash has value right up until it doesn't. You know, your financial world is incredibly important, and that's why we wanted to do a whole episode on it.
Right. And yeah, you know, part of prepping, it's not just having a well-stocked pantry or having enough bullets for your firearms. It's the psychological component of you and your loved ones that you're going to be okay, that you're going to hold together. All three of us are married. All three of us can probably agree. What's the number one thing that causes friction in relationships? It's finances.
Oh, yeah.
Certainly in the case of me and my wife, and I'm sure you guys can as well. You know, if you want your happy home to be held together for when the collapse comes, then you need to practice financial preparedness well before that happens. So what are our four pillars, Jim?
Okay. And this is something that I came up with a few years ago, this four pillars concept. Okay. Number one, we'll run through what all four are and then we'll dive back into them a little bit more. Number one is debt reduction. Number two is emergency savings. Number three is retirement planning. Number four is what I call the death file. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, with debt reduction, let me preface this by saying none of these are really more important than any other. They should all get equal time in your planning. They vary in importance based on where you are in your life. You know, for example, if you're drowning in debt, debt reduction is going to be a lot more important to you right now than retirement planning. Mm-hmm. But over the course of your lifetime, all four need to get attention. When we talk about debt reduction, this is arguably one of the hardest things for a lot of people to manage, partially because we're not taught how to manage money. Not these days. You know, I'm Gen X. Okay. I graduated high school in 1990. And I can tell you that throughout the 80s, they didn't talk about money management.
No.
Maybe at a very surface level. My kids, my youngest just graduated a couple of years ago. They're not being taught money management in any real meaningful way.
Mm-hmm.
Because my parents didn't teach me. I didn't learn how to do it. I was very fortunate to hook up with a spouse who is a financial genius.
That's awesome.
If it wasn't for her, we'd be having this conversation from a cardboard box.
Yeah.
Okay. The walls in my home would say this end up. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to debt reduction, let me say this. I know from where I speak, because I came to the table with an awful lot of debt. And we both made some pretty serious mistakes when we were young, and it took a long time to dig out of that hole. I mean, in our, what I would call the dark times, our annual income was less than $12,000, and our house payment was $1,000 a month. Do the math, okay? It was not a fun time, but we figured out how to manage it and how to get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
One of the first rules when it comes to debt recovery is paying interest sucks. Okay. Every dollar you spend in interest is a dollar you can't spend on something either fun or practical. Reach out to your credit card companies and the other debt, you know, creditors you have, and ask them, what can you do to work with me to get this reduced? Go ahead.
I'm so sorry to interrupt. Oh, I feel like we're about three steps ahead of where a lot of people are.
Okay.
A lot of people, when it comes to like the bills that come in constantly, they're like the one-off bills. Like you took the toll road.
Yeah.
So the very first thing that I would recommend that everyone do is look at it. It's not going to go away if you mm-hmm. ignore it. Okay. So get mm-hmm. all your bills together.
Yep.
Either they're reoccurring or they're due this month, next month. You have a payment plan. You don't have a payment plan. Put everything on one sheet of paper.
Yep.
It's going to make you ill. It is mm-hmm. going to be uncomfortable. It is not going to be a fun time, but it won't go away if you ignore
right.
it.
Right.
So pull everything that you can possibly think of. Go through your bank account and every line of a transaction, whether you're getting gas or mm-hmm. grabbing a soda from the vending machine. Pull it all down. Write it all down.
Yep.
If it's a payment on something that's bigger, like a loan, mm-hmm. a credit card, write down the total amount of that you have left on that loan, on that yep. credit card. But right before you get to the steps that Jim is at right now, pull it all down and mm-hmm. look at it and get a feel for where you're at.
Yep.
It'll look like one big pile of shit. But once you scoop everything into a big pile of shit, you can then like section it out into more manageable piles
yep.
of dookie
yep.
that you can pick up and put in one trash can.
Now, one thing that I want to point out that, and related to that, is a lot of credit cards today, you can set up alerts where it'll text you or email you every time the card gets used. I highly recommend that for two reasons. Number one, for fraud protection. Mm-hmm. You know, a charge pops up from a place you've never been before, you can act on it right away. But number two, it'll help you really get a handle on how often you're using your credit cards, how often other members of your family are using their cards, where they're using them, and how much they're spending. You know, like Dacia said, you've got to get it all out in front of you before you can do anything else.
Mm-hmm.
That's an excellent point. You have to know where you're starting from. Now, there's a very famous financial guru
mm-hmm.
who loves to talk about what he calls the debt snowball. And a lot of people think he invented this approach. My parents were using it when he was still in high school. Okay. He may have made it famous, but he didn't come up with it on his own. That said, it is a remarkably effective approach to reducing debt. And it starts by doing exactly what we talked about, writing down every single debt you have, no matter how big, no matter how small. You want to know the balance. You want to know how much your minimum payments are and how often you need to pay it. You know, if this is monthly, bi-monthly, whatever the case is. Now, the traditional debt snowball works like this. You put all of your debts in order from the smallest balance to the largest. You take that, the one with the smallest balance, you pay as much as you can possibly afford towards that balance while still making the minimum payments and everything else. And you keep doing that every month until that debt is gone. Once that's gone, you take what you were paying on that and put it towards the next balance. Again, making sure that you're paying the minimums and everything else. And you just keep rolling it forward. Now, depending on how big the pile of shit is in front of you, this can take a long time.
Like years.
It is. And the other critical part of this is that you avoid adding to it as much as possible. But it does work. I'm here to tell you, it works. It can take a long time, but it is effective. One of the ways you can speed it along is talk to some of these companies about reducing your interest rate, at least temporarily, so that more of your payment is going towards the principal each month. Some places might even be willing to suspend interest for a small period of time and allow you to try to catch up. One of the things that I learned in my experience dealing with these companies is communication is key. If you reach out to them in an honest, genuine effort to try to resolve things, they're far more willing to work with you than if they have to chase you down.
And that holds true not just for credit card companies and bank loans, but for utility. In particular, electricity providers, even your cable and your internet, your cell phone. If you reach out, it has always been my experience and the experience of other family members that, yeah, they'll work with you.
Yep.
They'll let you pay something. It may not be the amount owed, but as long as you're paying something, they won't cut you off.
And Brian King might know the answer to this question. What is the one bill that people get smacked with that causes the most bankruptcies?
I would guess probably healthcare, no?
It is. Healthcare, medical bills. Yep. But hospitals and hospital systems, don't ignore them. They won't. They will go to collections. They will go to collections the moment they're eligible to go to collections.
Mm-hmm.
When you get that medical bill, I don't care if it's 500, it's 5,000. If it's 500,000, call them. One, make sure it's the right amount. Okay. Make sure that if they did, I could do a whole show about health insurance billing. Make sure that when they sent the bill, if you have insurance, that the bill that you're receiving is not the negotiated rates and they're actually the out-of-pocket rates. Because 9 times out of 10, the out-of-pocket rates are going to be way cheaper because they know that they're less likely to get that amount of money from a person versus an entity. Negotiate the bill and get set up on a payment plan, no matter how long it is. Tell them what you can feasibly do every month or bi-month or bi-weekly. Mm-hmm. But definitely, again, call, just like credit cards, just like mortgages. I don't know now. Mortgages are so crazy now.
Mm-hmm.
It has been my experience as someone who is not insured through a health insurance company or provider that hospitals and doctors are actually more than willing to work with me. Mm-hmm. When I go in and I say I'm self-pay, I'm out of pocket, what's this going to cost? They let me know up front. And oftentimes, it doesn't put me in debt because I'm able to say, all right, I'll pay you that up front. Now that's because I've worked on debt and have some savings.
But right.
The other thing I would put out there is to not ignore is your automobile loans. And I say that as somebody who used to repo. I was the guy they sent when you had your auto loans. And I only did that for a year. It was a soulless, emotionally crushing job. And I couldn't do it anymore. I couldn't do that to these people. I was good at it. You know, it didn't matter where you hid that truck, I would find it. And I would,
That tracks. So
it's 3:15 in the morning and you come out with the shotgun, I'm already gone. But I hated doing that. But yeah, if you're underwater on your auto loans, call them. They will work with you, but they're also not going to play around.
No. As someone who was a process server for umpteen years, I feel your pain. Yep. I was the guy who would show up with the eviction notices, with the divorce summons, all that kind of stuff. And you're right. It's absolutely soul crushing. Mm-hmm. You know, when your job consists of delivering bad news to people all day long, every day, after a while, it gets old.
It does.
Now, circling back just a little bit to the debt stuff, another thing you want to do is get a copy of your credit report. It's free. Yes, you are entitled to it. Mm-hmm. And go through it with a fine-tooth comb. Look at every single line and make sure that every account on there is legit, is the balance looks right, the whole nine yards. You'd be surprised how many times just simple errors pop up and they can haunt you for a long time without you realizing that they're there because you've never looked at the credit report before. Go to, it's annualcreditreport.com, I think.
A lot of online banking also provides your credit report and it doesn't count as a hit on your credit report.
Yeah.
And you can check them as often as you want on some. I know through USAA and through Chase, you can do that.
Yeah.
I think the one thing when we're talking about debt that I want people to know is to stop being afraid of money.
Yes.
Stop being afraid because fear will rule your life just like it will rule your prepping. If you avoid it because you're afraid of it, you're afraid of the consequences.
Yep.
I want to tell you something, and I say you because I mean these two gentlemen, but I mean you listening. This is not the only money you are ever going to have.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Don't be afraid of your debt. Just work through it. Just like going to work, it's the same thing.
Tackle it head on, take care of it, and move on.
Okay, but if you're tackling debt, let's talk about emergency savings because households, even a bill of $300. I just paid a parking ticket that almost ran me $300 last week. And that's because I wanted to get myself in front of a judge so that I could explain to the judge that, you know, this parking meter maid has a personal beef with me and here's the video, et cetera. I paid the fees and everything just to get in front of that judge. But for many households, an unexpected bill like that completely screws up those debt reduction plans. So how do you build emergency savings when you're in that situation, Jim?
A little at a time. And that's where a lot of people get screwed up with this. It's kind of like food storage. Okay. People figure, well, I can't afford to go out and buy 10 cases of food. So how do I get started with this? You get started with one can and you let it build. With your emergency savings, you get started with your first dollar and you just build it up over time. Very few of us have the means to just drop 10 grand, toss it into a savings account and say, that's my emergency savings. That's not how this works for most of us. Most of us, we start out with $10, $15. We have a rummage sale and say we earn $100, we take 50 of it and put it in savings. Take the other 50 and go do something fun with it. You let it build up over time. And there's a lot of strategies you can do to increase the amount of money you have coming in, which will then you can shift over some of it into emergency savings. You know, explore side gigs, you know, little things that you can do to just bring in a couple extra bucks. Mm-hmm. That's how a lot of writers got started. We weren't making book deals right out of the gate. We were making pizza money. Mm-hmm. Okay. If you have bad habits that are costing you money, maybe consider reducing or eliminating some of those habits and taking some of that money and shifting it over. You know, there's a meme that crops up every now and again, and I'm going to paraphrase, so I can't remember it word for word, but basically, you know, if a meth addict gets up in the morning and he's broke, he doesn't say, well, I guess I'm just not going to do meth today. Mm-hmm. He figures out a way to get the money to buy that meth. Don't let a meth head outperform you when it comes to making money.
But also don't steal your grandmother's sewing machine and pawn it for cash.
No.
We're done.
What's
that level of motivation, not the means.
Yeah.
What's the best way to do this though? Traditional savings account with a little bit of interest, or you know, giant pickle jar in the pantry, or
I say whatever works for you. Yeah. If you have an account that's attached to a card and you know that if that's accessible to you and you are going to use it, if you have it, then maybe chop up the card. If you know that if you leave cash laying around the house that you're going to dip into it, maybe instead deposit it into a bank that you have access to. As far as saving money too, and I will say this all the time, we're a disaster show, right? One disaster is always going to be the person you married is a threat to your life. And I always say that the best handbook on how to squirrel away money to escape a situation like that is Gone Girl. Like, minus the framing him for murder.
Yeah.
But textbook girlfriend, listen to me, or boyfriend, it doesn't matter. If you need to squirrel away money and get the F out of there without them finding out, go read Gone Girl.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, I would echo that. Absolutely. For some of our older listeners who maybe do have the means, I'll tell you my method. And that is, with my stock investments, everything that pays a dividend, when that dividend money comes in, I automatically transfer it right over to an emergency savings account. And that savings account is strictly for emergency money. Mm-hmm. If I decide to burn the other side of my body rather than this side next time, I have that money there. Mm-hmm. You know, there are things like that as you're working on retirement planning that you can still do to continue to have your emergency savings.
One thing related to the emergency savings discussion that I would recommend is, however you want to set it up, you know, whatever works best for your family, I do recommend having a stash of cash at home that's accessible to you immediately. If there's a massive power outage, banks aren't going to be open. ATMs aren't going to be open. But if you need to buy something and the store is taking cash, you want to be able to have that cash available. Now, the question becomes, okay, well, how much cash? My standard recommendation is to have enough cash on hand to fill up your gas tank fully from empty, get you two nights in a reasonable motel, and get you enough meals for 2 days on the road. Whatever that amount comes to for you in your location, in your part of the country, that's how much you should have on hand at a minimum. You might never need to leave home, but that amount will still be sufficient to get you what you need at the local store. If you run out of diapers, you run out of formula, you run out of this, run out of that, and the store is taking cash, you'll have enough to get what you need in a general sense. Mm-hmm. More is always better than less.
I have a question related to that.
Yeah.
A lot of preppers in the hardcore prepping community, you know, tout the benefits of physical gold, physical silver. Mm-hmm. If you listen to news radio, particularly right-wing leaning news radio, every commercial break is nothing but ads for physical gold. How realistic is that in a hurricane situation, a blizzard situation?
No. It, precious metals are for preserving wealth long-term.
Mm-hmm.
They're not for immediate use. They're not for immediate needs. You go to, you know, North Carolina right now, you're not spending gold to buy anything.
No.
You're just not. You're spending cash. You're spending actual money. There are a lot of reasons why precious metals should be kind of on the back burner. Number one, let's say, just for the sake of argument, society collapses around our ears tomorrow and money, cash money is worthless. The U.S. currency is worthless. If you take bits of silver and gold to the gas station, are they going to know what it's really worth?
No.
It's worth whatever you kind of agree that it's going to be, which might be spot value, might not be. If you show up with precious metal, they don't know if it's legit or not.
Mm-hmm.
Unless they really are into it, and they might be reluctant to accept it for that reason alone. You know, let's say it's an evacuation scenario and I'm in my car, Daisha's in her car, and we're both fleeing the city, and we both realize, hey, we've got to stop for gas.
Mm-hmm.
I've got $50 in cash. You've got two gold pieces.
Or a bracelet, because who has pieces of gold?
Yeah. Who do you think is going to be able to walk out of there with a tank of gas?
Yeah.
You know, the precious metal stuff, it's for preserving long-term wealth. It's not for immediate use.
Well, speaking of preserving long-term wealth, mm-hmm. let's talk about retirement planning, because it sounds to me like cash and 401k is a lot better than some little gold bars from Franklin Mint.
Yes. The problem with, go ahead.
Yeah, let's talk about this because, like, for example, what do we all pay into? Medicare.
Yeah.
Or not Medicare, Social Security. Like, we all pay into Social Security. Am I ever going to see Social Security? I mean, I'm older than.
I mean, so you know.
Probably.
Without us getting off in the weeds, you know, our parents' generation was told it would be gone by the time they were the age they are now. And it's still there.
Yeah.
It's always going to be there.
But it's never going to be sufficient.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's there. Even if it's there at 100% of what it's supposed to be, it's never going to be sufficient for most of our lifestyles. Okay, and I say that as somebody who does not live an extravagant lifestyle, my collection of knives aside. the difficulty when it comes to talking about retirement planning in a prepper sense is a lot of hardcore survivalists and preppers are convinced that society is going to collapse before they're going to hit retirement age, so why bother?
Mm-hmm.
They've been saying that for an awful long time now. I mean, I can remember them saying this back in the 80s, and we're all still here.
I don't know, but everyone lost their retirement funds in 2008. I saw it happen so many times, and now, like me as like a mature adult, my retirement fund is my writing. Like, is that something that I can do until I'm old, Brian?
I mean, writing specifically, it has been my experience that most of the full-time writers, and by that I mean the bestsellers, the ones who are making a very good living doing this, they reach their middle 70s and they can't do it anymore.
Wow. Thank you for saying that.
You know, I will not name him on the air, but a very famous writer who both of you would know, who most of our listeners would know, even if they're not fans of horror.
Mm-hmm.
This is someone who wrote for television back in the 60s, some iconic television episodes, wrote some iconic novels. was in his 80s and suffering from dementia and still had to write a book a year to make ends meet. Mm. Mm-hmm. That is not retirement planning. No, writing is not retirement planning. You know, Jim's knife collection is a better idea of retirement.
It's kind of.
I mean, it's funny, but you know, if he has to, Jim can sell those knives tomorrow. Mm-hmm. You know, I've got a comic book collection last appraised and valued at just under $48,000. Would I get that if I sold it tomorrow? No, but I'd get something sizable for it.
Sure.
You know, most of my retirement is in the stock market, day trading. I don't use a broker. I do it myself. What we found during the pandemic is that with no training whatsoever, I seem to be pretty good at picking winners.
Good job.
Just like the ponies. We've grown that considerably over the last couple of years. Do I fear another 2008? Sure I do, which is why not everything.
Yeah.
You know, we have other savings and other things we've done. But and I understand I'm not the expert. Jim's the expert. The one thing I would caution people, you know, I've been writing full time for almost 30 years, which means for almost 30 years, I have not had a 401k.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot easier to start retirement planning in your 20s.
Oh, so much easier
than it is in your 50s. But in your 20s, you're not thinking about it. You know, it's like when I was in the Navy, they said, oh, we'll offer you full retirement if you'll stay in until you're 48. I said, 48, that's a million years away. I don't have to think about that. You know,
aww.
At 56, I'm like, you idiot.
Yeah. Well, when you're 25, like retirement is such a negligible amount. You think that, oh, if I don't spend it on retirement, I could just wait another 10 years and then put that hunk of money that I missed out on in my 20s. I will have it by the time I'm 30 and then I'll invest
like that, kids.
No, you will never.
Yeah. If you're 25 and you're listening to this show and you've never taken anything away from any of our episodes, the one thing I want you to take away is you need to start retirement planning now.
Yes.
I mean, there were people in high school who would have bet serious money I wouldn't survive to 25, let alone retirement age. Okay. So a lot of that was new to me. You know, and it probably, I mean, I was in my 40s before we started really seriously looking at retirement planning, and that was ridiculous. We should have been doing it in our 20s. You know, and by all means, if you're 25, start today.
Mm-hmm.
If you're 45, start today. I don't care how old you are. If you're not doing it yet, you need to start doing it now.
And when you say start today, what are some things they should do?
Oh, yeah.
The number one investment is in self-reliance. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Learn how to do things yourself so that you don't have to spend money to have them done. Learn how to grow food. Learn how to find good deals. Mm-hmm. Learn how to harvest rainwater. You know, all of these things that we talk about from a homesteading sense, they're self-reliance and they're going to save you money in the long run. No, you're not going to be emptying rain barrels in your 90s, okay? More or less. I know a few. But by learning how to can and preserve food, to grow food, to do a lot of these things that we talk about, it's going to save you money in the long run that you can then put towards paying off your mortgage earlier, paying off your auto loans, all that kind of stuff. On top of that, if your employer offers 401k, do it.
Into it. Especially if they match it. If they match it, that's free money.
Yes.
Sorry, yes. I need to yell.
If you work for a corporation of any size, I highly recommend you make an appointment to talk to the HR people there. Talk to them about what the employer offers. for 401k, for what is the savings account, the
FSA, HSA, yeah,
thank you. Any of that kind of stuff. It's some of it's free money, some of it is pre-tax money. All of it is geared towards putting more money back into your pocket rather than having it go somewhere else. Anything you can do to consider opening up your own IRA, mm-hmm. you know, and talk to retirement planners about what the options are that would be best suited for you in your individual situation. Writing is not feasible as a retirement plan, but it can certainly help finance your retirement planning.
Absolutely. Okay. If you don't know anything about retirement plans and you walk into any bank, they're going to be jumping over each other to talk to you and help you and sell you a plan, a retirement mm-hmm. plan, or any whatever you agree collectively is the best route for you. They would be more than happy to set you on the right track.
Mm-hmm. Other things that you can look at are, you know, like Brian was talking about investing, you know, the stock market, things like that. Once upon a time, real estate investments were highly recommended, having rental properties. As someone who was a process server for umpteen years serving evictions, I'm very reluctant to recommend people become landlords because I've seen the ugly side of it.
It's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work. It's a lot of risk. I mean, mm-hmm. I remember I served papers once on an eviction where I walk up to the front door, and this sounds really kind of silly, but when you've been doing this a long time, when you get to the front door, you kind of know if somebody's there or not before you even knock. You mm-hmm. get a feeling whether there's, you know, whether it's occupied.
You do.
I immediately, there's nobody here. Mm-hmm. But I knock, and I stand there, and I'm waiting. And as I'm standing there, I can hear water running. That's kind of odd. Nobody's around. I can't really see in the windows. I go back to the office. We get a hold of the client. Make a long story short, it turns out that the tenants had moved out about 8 weeks prior. Oh, and right before they left, they plugged every drain in the place and turned all the faucets on. Wow. And the water had been running for 2 months and it was trashed.
Oh my God.
Absolutely trashed. Now, you can sue the tenants for damages, but collecting that money is going to be pretty tough. I mean, if they weren't even paying you rent that they owed, let alone mm-hmm. tens of thousands of dollars in damage, all of that comes out of your pocket to try to fix everything. It's just, to me personally, the risk is too high. For other people, I know people who are making good money on the side, you know, renting out property. And if you're willing to take on that risk, go for it. Just myself personally, not a fan.
Well, being in the military, I moved every 3 years since I was born. We lived in Denver for a stint of about like 7 or 8 years before moving to Pennsylvania, but we've sold houses. I've gotten myself out of debt so many times just moving and selling our house and putting that equity in our pocket and paying off. Like, our cars have been paid off for years.
Mm-hmm.
But I know a lot of people aren't, one, they don't own their home, or two, are not in a position to up and move or want to.
Right.
But if you've ever dreamed of moving and your APR is higher than like 6.75 right now, I don't know what, loans are insane.
Yeah.
Selling your home and pocketing that equity and getting out of debt, you can start fresh, buy a brand mm-hmm. new home. You yep. have no credit cards. Your credit score is going to be immaculate.
Mm-hmm.
It's just an idea. I don't recommend anybody just up and move right now.
Right.
It's hard.
We
it's
one of
the most stressful things you can do. Top three.
We just hit that landmark of our mortgage is down to 4 digits.
I saw that. Congratulations. That's crazy.
That's awesome.
Great.
Yeah.
And that's
we should have it paid off in about, I think, 4 years early, which It could have been a lot earlier, but because of mistakes we made years ago, we were playing catch up for a long time, but we're still getting it paid off really good, really fast.
And that's what it's all about. If God forbid something happened to you tomorrow, mm-hmm. you know your family and your loved ones are going to be better off in that case.
Right.
And that's why we prep, folks. That's why we do this show. It's mm-hmm. it's about taking care of the people you love. So mm-hmm. let's talk about taking care of the people you love if you're the one to go first. Now, we've touched on this
yeah. in
previous episodes. But Jim, you call it the death file.
Yeah.
I would have picked a different name, but you want to.
Well, you know, there are a lot of names for this. Okay. You know, if I go first, you know, I like the death file because it's short and sweet. Basically, what it consists of is information that your loved ones are going to need should you pass away. Now, I speak from experience when I say that this is very, very important. My dad died in 2019. And he was in bad health. I mean, there was nobody who was like, oh my God, really? But for a few years prior to his passing, I would periodically bring up, you know, his will and last wishes and, hey, we need to talk about this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And he wanted nothing to do with the conversation. Every single time he said, the will is over in my desk in a file, the file in there will have everything you need. Okay. When he passed, I dug out that file. It consisted of a 2-page will that basically said nothing, and that was it. And my wife and I spent several months trying to cobble together all of his financial information, all of these different accounts that he had, trying to close things out while we're also clearing out his house, while we're also hiring people to repair his house so we can get it on the market. Mm-hmm. And throughout all of this, we have no time to grieve.
Mm-hmm.
We have no time to process the loss because we're dealing with all this bullshit. Don't do that to your family. Okay. Take time now to put together whatever you want to call it. We'll call it the death file. In there should be your will, your living will, your other health directives, just because that's a convenient place to keep all of it. Okay. Power of attorney, that kind of stuff. Fun fact, when a loved one passes away, make sure you get a lot of official copies of the death certificate
mm-hmm.
because a lot of places demand an original. They won't take a photocopy. They won't take a scanned copy. They want originals. And that, as of 2019, at least, that was our experience. So make sure you get multiple copies of it when you order the death certificate. Make a list of every single financial account you have. Bank accounts, credit cards, everything. Every single thing that involves your money should be in this file.
Your 401k, your investments. Your
IRAs,
mm-hmm.
gym memberships,
mm.
and any of that kind of stuff. Have it all in there so that your family knows where every nickel is going and that they can immediately close out accounts like gym memberships that you're obviously not going to be using anymore. Okay. You want to make things as easy as you can for your family to deal with this stuff. Online accounts. And I know that cybersecurity experts are going to go through the roof when I say this. Write down your password.
Mm-hmm.
Write down your login so that your family can get into these accounts without having to jump through 85 million hoops and prove this, that, and the third. Let them get in there.
Mm-hmm.
Deal with this stuff.
Yeah, especially if you have a passive income like TikTok or something silly like that. You have an Etsy shop or something. Yeah. Definitely write those down. If you have business accounts, you especially mm-hmm. need to add those too.
Yep. Social media accounts.
Social media accounts.
Now, like okay. Facebook, for example, there is a means where you can appoint, mm-hmm. I think, appoint somebody to manage your account when you pass. I forget exactly all the ins and outs of it. As far as I'm concerned, I'd rather leave Facebook out of the equation and just have a means where my family members can go in, log into the account, they can answer messages, they can send messages, things like that. Along the same lines, have a list of people that your family should contact to let them know that you passed. We all have two sets of friends. We've got our friends who we meet in real life, and we have our online friends who our family thinks are like just fake characters. They don't know that these are real human beings. Okay, I have a friend named Pete. I've met him once. He lives in Minnesota. When I talk about him to my family, he's just my buddy Pete in Minnesota. They have no idea who he is. They don't know his last name. They couldn't pick him out of a police lineup. But he's on my list to contact that, hey, Jim kicked the bucket. You know, along those lines, you might suggest that a message be, you know, Pete, Jim passed. Please notify everybody in this Facebook group, and this Facebook group, because you're all members in these groups. So that they can help get the word out that, you know, something has gone awry in their life.
So, Jim, we hit retirement really hard, but what about life insurance? Is life insurance, like, because that's money that you won't get to touch because you'll be dead. For me, I have enough life insurance that my house is paid off. All my debts are paid, like the entire debts are paid off. And same with my husband, because I'll tell you, if my husband goes, I'm not fucking going to work. I'm not working. Somebody's going to have to come and make sure that, like, I'm looking at my kids and feeding them and feeding myself. Like, I'm going to be no good at all. I'm not working. So we have accounted for those cases.
I do recommend life insurance. I am not well versed in it enough to give solid advice as to what to look for. I would talk to an agent about, you know, the different plans that are available to you, you know, and make an educated decision based on that. But I do highly recommend having it and making sure that information is in this death file. My dad passed. He had no life insurance. Everything we paid was out of pocket. About 6 months later, I get a call out of the blue from an insurance company. Says, yeah, we're doing a routine audit in our files, and we discovered that, you know, he passed, and you're the beneficiary. Wow. Okay. here's all my information, yada, yada. They sent me a check. It was like $200. You know, it wasn't really anything, but it was money that I had no idea was out there, you know, because my dad didn't bother to take care of any of this. One other thing that I recommend that you put into the death file is notes to your family members. Okay. And I'm just going to leave it at that. You put whatever you want in those notes. But a lot of people have difficulty communicating verbally their feelings. This is a great way to do it. Okay. Now, we have a tendency in the prepper world to kind of give the side eye to FEMA. Okay. And we're not necessarily wrong in some cases. That said, if you go to ready.gov, they have an outstanding resource called, and I got to look it up here, the FEMA Emergency Financial First Aid Kit. Where they can walk you through step by step on a lot of this kind of stuff. Another recommendation, particularly for the death file stuff, and I mentioned this in a previous show, Knockbox, NOKBox.com. NOK stands for Next of Kin. They have done so much of the legwork for you. You literally just have to fill in the blanks on a lot of this stuff, and it'll make things so much easier for your family. It really will. And again, speaking from experience, it sucks having to try to cobble together all of this on your own after the fact when you have nobody to ask.
Man, what a note to wrap on.
Yeah, well,
there is that.
But it is going to be okay.
It yeah. is, especially tonight, no matter what happens.
Yeah, and next week we're gonna have a happier note because everybody loves cute animals, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's dogs or cats or bunnies or chinchillas or goldfish, whatever you have as a pet. Mm-hmm. Next week's episode, we're going to devote to our furry and scaly and other animal friends. And
yes. Send us pictures.
Yeah, definitely. I want to see on social media. I want to see people posting pictures of their pets.
Exactly. Yes. Mm. All right. So we will have that for you next week. But yes, as we said at the start, we're recording this on election night. You're listening to it next week. But regardless of the outcome, it's going to be okay. Right, Daisha?
It is going to be okay.
That's right. Absolutely. See, I like it better when you say it.
It sounds more reassuring.
It does. Aww, really nice. I'm like, it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
I can do, I do a knife hand. Like a the knife hand. It's going to be okay.
All right. We will see you next week, folks.